So nice to be here. Kia ora and good evening from down under in New Zealand, Auckland, Aotearoa. Where I just click. Yeah, I can see you all. I like being organized, so I've tried to write out a sharing and we'll see how we go. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon family groups. I have been for 35 years. It was a long journey for me, but I've got to where I am now, and I'm happy to share that parts of that with you. My home group is Red Beach Step Study Group, family group, and which is a 30-minute drive north of Auckland. If you know New Zealand as well at all, it's in the beautiful beaches of the Hibiscus Coast, and I live in Orewa. We're in spring at the moment, and I'm suffering from a pollen allergy, so please excuse me if I start coughing. My apologies for that. I've got my cough lollies and my hot drink, so we'll see if I can get through it. Excuse me. It was a lovely surprise to be invited to share my story after hearing from Matt after my speaking at Albuquerque. Thank you, Matt, for the opportunity, and thank you, Ron, for the introduction. I congratulate those of you that have had birthdays. Well done. It's amazing to see that progress in so many years in the fellowship. I nervously accepted this invitation because I couldn't possibly talk for myself for that amount of time, but Matt was very reassuring and encouraging. So here I am. To start with, I didn't grow up with active alcoholism in the family. I grew up in a family with an older brother and two older sisters. He was only the occasional drink of alcohol. Mum and dad were hard workers and determined and with good English values, but I discovered later that the isms of alcoholism had come through with them. And like most, I learned that children were to be seen and not heard. Don't think I'll tell you what to do, what to think. Do as you're told. Don't talk back. I don't want your opinion. Respect is earned. So please, please, everyone, they'll do what you want. And I'd heard the family stories about how each of us had arrived. And there being number four, I was an extra surprise. Although I felt loved and not rejected by my mother, who was always a rock for me, and we had a spiritual togetherness that we shared. And she helped me in my journey as well. And it was wonderful to see her journey in a different way, not Al-Anon. But in hearing those stories, I came to believe that I was an unwanted child, and I should have been a boy instead of a girl. But that was my interpretation, not reality. I tried hard to please everyone and would do whatever it took for them to be happy. So I just went along with everyone else's wishes and opinions. When things went wrong, I believed God was punishing me for being a girl and for anything else that went wrong. It was a punishing God. I cruised through school and watched my brother and sisters to know what rules to break and what rules not to break. I sat on the fence and watched the world go by. Only problem, while I was sitting on the fence, I didn't know which side I belonged on. My world depended on other people making my decisions and being responsible for my happiness. At the age of 15, I fell in love at high school or college. I fell in love head over heels because someone actually noticed me and wanted to spend time with me. I don't actually remember being asked to get married, but somehow it happened. I was willingly followed along the decisions that were made. I then expected the fairy tale, happy ever after, and a life of bliss. I placed my responsibility for my happiness, my well-being, and my self-esteem on my husband. who I did not know at the time, was unable to give it. I thought if he loved me the way I loved him, he'd know how to make me happy. All I wanted was to be happy. I didn't feel loved, though, the way I thought I should, and the way I wanted to be loved. I wanted him to tell me often because I told him. I needed continued affirmations of his love for me, with flowers or gifts or intimacy, not just sex, hugs and listening and talking. Was wanting him to spend time with me and doing things together. You see, he should have been thinking about me or how to please me every minute of the day, because that's what I was doing because I loved him. My obsession was my way to love and care for someone. I thought if I wasn't thinking about them all the time, then I didn't really care about them. So I continued to obsess. When I got to Al-Anon, I discovered a different meaning of love. Love is not physical attraction. It's not sex. It's not having to be everything to everyone. It's not believing what everyone says. It's not owning another person and they don't own me. It's not putting someone on a pedestal, treating them like God, and then complaining that they act like God. I nagged, I pleaded, cried, was submissive and manipulative, and I was easy to manipulate because I went along with everything. I realized I was an immature woman with no gumption or courage that just needed to grow up. I found it difficult to make decisions because I didn't have any opinions of my own. I kept relying on everyone else's. I'd listen and agree to both sides, but still not know what to do. I had no confidence to speak up if I disagreed. I was submissive to whoever I needed to please. I've heard that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. But when I was always sitting on the fence, I didn't know which side it was. I needed to take action. I thought I needed to take control. I had a husband who was out drinking. I had children that wouldn't do what they were told, and the house was crazy. So I went to a woman's assertive course. This would show me how to stand up for myself and manage everyone else. I discovered how really helpless and hopeless I was. I broke down and cried through the role play that they had that evening. I was so bad they had to ask me to leave the room, and I sat in the corridor crying until the class was over. After the class, a very wise tutor asked the right questions, and I confessed how horrible it was living with the drinking. I couldn't understand why he was okay when he was drinking, he was fun and lots of fun, but when he was sober, he was mean and horrible. And if he drank too much, then the violence happened. I couldn't understand what I was doing wrong. When she suggested Al-Anon and what it was, I couldn't figure out how that had anything to do with me. I wasn't the drinker. I didn't need to change. We had a great weekend after that. We had enjoyed our time together and the kids were well behaved and he was. Then at work on the Monday morning, I got a physical tap on my shoulder. I believe my higher power touched me and said to go to the Al-Anon meeting that was suggested. I went. I saw the Serenity Prayer on the wall and I knew God was telling me something. I knew he was there and I needed to rely on him. I cried a lot. I'd heard the Serenity Prayer before, but I hadn't taken it to heart. I hadn't done anything with it. But seeing it on the wall, and then people, loving people around, listening to what I had to say, and them saying what was happening for me, I started to trust. But I still cried. I cried a lot to get my own way, often. But then at the meetings, when I cried even more for relief of knowing I was not alone, I wasn't crazy after all. I learned to allow feelings to rise up. I learned that feelings are not wrong, they just are. They're there to protect me. They're there to enjoy happiness as well as to learn from their discomfort. They're there to help you learn and participate in life. Because this program is a program for living. In hearing about others' feelings, I was able to trust the others, and in sharing together, it helped me find me, the real me. I didn't like it when my husband was angry. I mean, he didn't know how to fix me from crying, and I didn't know how to stop him from being angry. And when he threw the furniture around the room and was abusive, that was anger. I wasn't like that. I wasn't angry. But I discovered my anger was suppressed, and the tears, it was tearing at my inside, and the tears helped me with my anger. I was angry at me for putting up with it, angry at me for not knowing what to do about it, angry at me not knowing how to fix it and change things. And I was as sick as my secrets were, and I needed to release them. My crying was my anger being washed away. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Before Al-Anon, I was obsessed with what others thought and how to please them. And I based my relationships with others according on what I thought they were thinking of me. I imagine what they were thinking was based on my opinion of myself, which wasn't very high. See, if I thought I was useless and I'd done something, then I presumed they thought I was even more useless. But when I did something right, I could only think that they were seeing what I was doing wrong. That I ask a simple question and then arguments would begin. I had to justify myself. Someone noticed that the dishes weren't done. Well, I thought they were thinking I was untidy, lazy, and unclean. That was just in my head. If I was asked, where was I, out of curiosity or something, they were actually thinking that I was useless and I wasn't a bad parent and I should have been at home. I was trying to justify myself and over-explain myself so they would understand me. They could just understand me, would all get along a lot better. And I learned in Al-Anon that justifying myself was actually arguing. And that arguing was trying to make the other person think like me. Well, that wasn't going to happen. He was male, I was female for a start. We think differently. But each of us wanted the last word. I played mind games with myself, and I expected others to read my mind. And I was trying to read theirs. I was unhappy. I would pout and sulk. When asked what was wrong, say nothing. But still have a frown, and expecting them to know how to make me feel better. I wasn't just reading other people's minds and getting it wrong, but I was punishing those I loved for not being able to read mine or to fix me. We both communicated through manipulation and with withdrawing love to get what we wanted. If one of us did not get what we wanted or do what something a certain way, we would punish the other some way. There'd be tit for tat. It was a battle of evening the score. It was when I went to an open AA meeting and listened to an alcoholic tell my story that I realized we're as sick as each other. I dreaded him coming home from work, not knowing what mood he was in. And he was dreading coming home to me, not knowing what mood I was in. We were both on an emotional roller coaster ride. And he used alcohol to numb his emotions. And I was just a nervous wreck and didn't know what to do. With my higher power and conference-approved literature in the meetings, I changed my attitude to one of welcome. I had to make a change, welcoming him home to his home as a guest. Had to change my thinking. Welcome him like I would a newcomer at a meeting, with a smile instead of a snarl, with a hug instead of a rebuke. I had to start seeing what he did right and complimenting him. It wasn't easy to start with. I couldn't think of anything that he was doing right. But in time and practicing small compliments, looking for what he did right, we started to smile at each other. And I learned that in the meetings when people were doing that to me. I was nagging, I pleaded, I cried. I realized I was immature, no gumption or courage. I found it difficult to make decisions because I had no opinions of my own. I'd listen and agree. I was trying so hard to please. I loved him so much. Why would he go anywhere else? Because I did not understand when an infidelity happened. Then I felt even more worthless, unloved, not good enough anywhere, not in bed anywhere. He obviously doesn't love me anymore. But when challenged, he said he did love me, and they didn't mean anything to him. I love you. I want you. And as you probably know, makeups are very, very intense, and we can get there in the end. So we stayed together. I did everything I could so he'd love me enough to stay. And he did. But it happened more than once. Then I learned about unacceptable behavior. If you see nothing, you're saying that unacceptable behavior is okay, and you're accepting that behavior when you say nothing. I could not sit on the fence and let this keep happening. I had to set a boundary and stick up for myself and say I would not accept this anymore. I prayed for what I wanted. And the proverb came to me: if you love something, set it free. If it comes back, it's yours. If it doesn't, it never was. I sat down and I explained to my husband and want that I wanted him to be happy. He was obviously not happy with our relationship, and that if he had found someone that would make him happier than I loved, than me, and loved him enough, I loved him enough to let him go. Because we'd had that many arguments, like you go, you go, you go, you go. And we couldn't decide, we kept coming back together. But I decided to let him go, let him know I loved him. If he found someone else, go for it. I'd be happy for you. But I would not share him with another woman. That was my boundary. He said he would stay. See, God's plan was there all along. I got to Al-Anon in time. I got there. Excuse me. I got there 4 years before my husband died in a car accident. We spent those years with me in recovery. He actually went to some AA meetings the year before he died. It didn't suit him to continue them, but whatever they told him changed him. And with me working the program, and we shared our last year peacefully. I had many amends. I made many amends by my change in attitude and behaviour. Although I was pretty mad with God when he took them, leaving me with rebellious teenagers, not happy. Our eldest son then followed his father with alcohol and drugs and crime. I found it hard to say no to him. So when my son would ask for $20 and I knew what it was for and it was not likely to get it back, I usually tried to justify my no. He'd have to have a reason to disagree with me and why I should give it to him, and come up with another reason every time I gave him a reason not to, and we ended up arguing and I would generally just give in. But I learned to think more, ask myself some things. If I could do without that $20, maybe I can say yes. What was my reason for giving it? If I couldn't, and I needed it myself, then the answer was no. Why was I giving him the 20? I had to genuinely think about it myself. Was I enabling him? Was I just keeping the peace? He soon learned that no was a complete sentence, and I learned how to say no in so many different ways. No, 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 no. Made it interesting, but he soon discovered that I was stronger and I could hold my ground thanks to my higher power that gave me the courage to stand up for these new values. When I first found my courage and stood up for myself, I sometimes got a bit carried away. In the beginning, the pendulum would swing way out to the side. I went from relying on others for my identity to forgetting about everyone else. Their opinions didn't matter. Their feelings were theirs. I didn't have to consider them anymore. Life became about me. And coming to believe in a higher power outside of myself that could love me for who I truly am was a miracle for me. This let other people off the hook. I did not have to rely on them to feel worthy, loved, or even accepted. My relationship with them is not so needy and demanding of sympathy and recognition. It wasn't easy, and it was humbling to get through that and accept when I was wrong and accept that I needed to change and let it begin with me. In working the steps, I started to recognize that we were friends and family that did love me, but they were just showing it in a different way. I was loved. I was ignoring their love because it wasn't the way I thought it should be. I was ungrateful. I now appreciate the way different ways love can come to me, and the people that give it to me, I can be gracious. But I did discover that I cannot make someone love me the way I want to be loved, but I can become a lovable person. I cannot be everything to everyone. That these people love me in their own special way, the same way I want to love them back. They love me the best way they can, the best way they know how. And I learned that from the rooms of Al-Anon, from the members. Unconditional love. And then I learned to live unconditionally. I can give now with no strings attached. There are no conditions in what I do or give to other people. There's no, oh, if I do this for you, you must do that for me. Not in my head anymore. And there's no tit for tat. And I won't do this for you because you didn't do that for me. There's no evening up the score. I now chose to give what I can and stop when it starts to give me pain or discomfort. I know my limits and accept other people's limits. On the journey about communication and love, I discovered two words to take out of my vocabulary: should and always. Whatever I did or said for my husband told me, "You should have did this. You should have said that. Why didn't you do this?" This further instilled in me the thought that I could not think for myself and felt useless. I seemed to always say and do the wrong thing. If I cooked dinner, I was wrong. If I waited to cook when he got home, I was wrong. I was useless if I didn't make his lunch. It was no good if he didn't want what I gave him. My sponsor said to me, "You know, if you fall over, he's going to tell you you fell the wrong way." Well, that he did continually. Whatever I did was wrong, but I was still trying to make it right. Then I asked myself, why am I trying so hard to please someone who doesn't respect me or appreciate me? How do I get his respect? So, with some courage from the Serenity Prayer, one day I had a conversation and I should have done this and I should have done that. The next time I mentioned I should have, I was like, well, you weren't there. So I used my own brain, and that's what I did, and that's what I said, and it can't be changed. So don't tell me I should have done anything. I realized that I don't always do the wrong thing. Sometimes I amaze myself, and it's okay to give myself credit. I grew up with self-praise is no recommendation. But I've learned that it's okay to pat yourself on the back when you do something right. And it's okay to tell friends you've done something well. You're not skiting. You are believing in yourself and being proud of yourself. I can give myself credit even when nobody else does. I just have to please God and me, not everyone. I need to respect myself and believe in myself before I can expect others to respect me. Other people don't always do everything wrong. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. So I've taken out the should and the always out of my vocabulary. See, I used to moan a lot about what others had done to me, but now I'm able to flip the coin and change my attitude, see the positive. So I don't do that to other people. When I see what others do to me that I don't like, I try not to do it back to others. When I'm shown appreciation and respect, I try to pass it on. When I was given compliments, I didn't like them. I thought the person wanted something in return if they said I looked nice or something about me that I did well. And when I was actually craving for it, when it happened, it felt false. But I learned to accept my sponsor helped me to accept that. And sorry, got kids yelling out the back. Okay. And she would compliment me on things, and she had this way of coming right up to you, right in your face, and asking you how you are. And you couldn't move away. And you had to honestly say how you were, because she would know. And she was amazing. And I was, she was my sponsor for 20 years before she passed away. An incredible lady with lots of wisdom. But now, if I'm shown disrespect or feel unappreciated, I can have faith in myself and know myself and suck it up, because the world doesn't revolve around me or everyone's opinion of me. I don't know what their day's been like. Might have been a shit day. But they don't have to take it out on me, and I don't have to take it personally. I remember an incident when my daughter, someone had backed into her car in the car park, And she didn't get upset. And I said, "Why aren't you upset about it?" She said, "Well, there's no point yelling and screaming about it," she said. "It's not going to fix the car, is it?" And I don't know what sort of a day he's had. And since we've lost many members in our family to death, I realize in that sense, I don't know what's happening in anyone's life, the way they feel on any instant of any day. And if they're not in a bad, good space and I get the brunt of it, it's not generally about me, it's about where they're at. During the fourth step, I recognize that I got my self-worth back and it was time to take control. Poor me needed to change. The steps helped me find me, who I was, how I'd become who I was, and why I did what I did. But it is my journey through the traditions that was the big breakthrough that improved my relationship with my family. One, unity. My wishes are no important than anyone else's. That helped me when it came to my husband's funeral, and the loudest of the teenagers had nothing to say and didn't want to talk about it. And we were able to say, "We'll speak now because afterwards you'll have no say. It'll be done. And don't come back and say, this is what should have happened." The unity needed to come at the beginning, not at the end. Two, authority. I do not have all the answers. I will put my trust in my higher power. His will is better than mine. Three, mutual aid. When I talk to others who share my beliefs and concerns, I become stronger than when I can try and do things on my own. It's okay to ask for help. Four, the autonomy. I can do what I like, but I need to consider how my actions will affect others in my family. Five, our purpose. Let it begin with me. Stick to my purpose, not everyone else's, to help myself to maturity before I can help others. I look for the good in others with respect and encouragement. Six, endorsement. Rely on my higher power for my strength. I will not give my self-worth away to others. Seven, self-supporting. I support family members with my time now instead of gifts of money. I will not force others to help me financially and emotionally. For my own well-being, I have checkups with my dentist and my doctor, so I'm not a burden to others. As you get older, you know these things, eh? Eight, non-professional. I will humbly share my Al-Anon recovery with others and not expect payment or to be put on a pedestal and make out to be known better than anyone else. Nine, responsible. Knowing my own strengths and limitations allows me to help others when I can, but to say no when my skills and knowledge is limited. 10, controversy. I do not gossip. When I am concerned about someone's well-being, I go directly to that person. I don't ask another how they are. I do not speak on behalf of others. Sorry about that. If I'm not part of the solution, I shouldn't be part of the problem. 11, attraction. My growth comes from learning to be me and being an example to others. 12, anonymity. As I don't know anything, everything, I'm equal with others. I'm not above or below anyone else anymore. I will stick to the facts and try not to get emotional. Discovering a meaningful relationship with my children has been one of the most rewarding parts of my recovery. Because of the program, we have been able to share tremendous grief. There's a list. I've lost a sister, a husband, a sister-in-law, a granddaughter, and a son. A brother who suffers from a head injury from an accident, and a sister who's going through breast cancer. All of these things we've been able to share together because of the love and acceptance of this program and sharing it with my family. We now have overwhelming love and support with each other, and that I never thought was possible before. It's funny what you learn from your kids and how they learn by osmosis, just by being you, if you're working the program, if you're living it day to day. It was just the other day I was reminded that I have a look that my children recognize. I believe I use it automatically. I don't know when I do it, but my children know what it means. I recognize this in my father from my childhood. When he did it, we would pay attention, and whatever he did, it was very stern. You didn't cross that look. And talking to my daughter again, I was able to apologize for the look that was used during a very sensitive family discussion. I said, "Sorry about that look yesterday. I didn't get that right." And she said, "No, you didn't." And that was the end of the subject. I'd made amends. I'd apologized. We understood each other. We couldn't go back and change it. I didn't over-explain and justify myself. She never expected me to. She didn't rub it in. There were no put-downs, no angry, no crying. We understood each other, and we can love and accept each other, warts and all. And that's what this program has given me. In service, I did a lot of service over my 35 years. And it has been amazing to be able to use that outside of the program. And when I learned about communication and the shoulds and the always and the see what's right and not what's wrong, I thought I'd do a communications course. And that led to other courses and then a degree. So this program helped me educate myself even further than what Al-Anon had. And I was able to get a university degree and have a really high-paying job. And now it's so different when I'm at home, retired, and sitting here talking with you about what I've learned in the program. I was just as nervous to do this as going to work. But it's taught me that I share my love with my family. I'd like to finish with the lines from a very popular song that we all know, One Day at a Time, written by Mary John Wilkin and Chris Christopherson. The lines I like and I read often beside my mirror in my bathroom: "Help me believe in what I could be and all that I am. Show me the stairway I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time." And I will share that with my grandchildren and great-grandchildren always. It's been a privilege to be here today. Thank you for this opportunity.